It is the Ed Till Show. Susan Colton returns. Public schools in the new year. Public education is changing, and for some, not necessarily for the better. For 30 years, Susan has taught in public school classrooms and worked in school administration as a highly respected, nationally recognized principal. Her book is called Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. Susan, welcome back to the show. How are you this Friday?
I'm just doing terrific, Ed. Happy New Year to you.
And to you. Thank you. I want public schools to do better, and I think a lot of people do, but also worry that the way the system of public education is structured is making it tough to revamp, to improve, and that we wind up on a very local level in political opposition when it comes to course matter, when it comes to what kids need. And it really doesn't belong in politics, but at the same time, they say it does belong at the local level. Parents, teachers have to come together. So it's inevitably political. Can you help us unwrap that a little bit?
Sure. As far as what's happening in this new year, the federal government replaced the No Child Left Behind Act with something called Every Student Succeeds Act, which is ESSA. You know how educators are known for their acronyms. In the ESSA, although Congress passed it in December of 2015, the states, individual states, had to submit their state plans by September of 2017. So what we're seeing now is our Secretary of Education approving or sending back those state plans, which were designed to give more local and state control to public education. One of those ways that they would be able to make some changes is, last time we talked about, the testing versus teaching debate, and that students are spending most of their time taking standardized tests and bubbling in, and they're not given the opportunity to think and apply what they learn to real world concepts. So within the state levels now, they are allowed to make some changes in student assessment. In other words, they're not just everything is tied to one test score that the student takes every spring, that they're allowed to also do some authentic kind of demonstration work with the students so that they can demonstrate what they've learned. They can give a debate and express their opinions and the results of their research. The other part that's a positive possibility is that states can be allowed to change the way teachers are evaluated and assessed. And right now, teachers are evaluated based on student test scores. And it's not just the test scores of their students that they teach. It's the test scores of the entire school. So whether they are an effective teacher or a highly effective teacher, which is tied to their salary, is dependent on how the school does as a whole. For example, an art or a music teacher might have, they have students in their classroom who take tests in reading and mathematics, and they may be teaching those things through the content area, but they may not have all of those students in their classrooms. So, this is this is an opportunity. If the states do take this opportunity and the politics is not involved, and if our Department of Education secretary approves the plans that come through for the states, I'm seeing a possible breakthrough for 2018.
Interesting. Thank you. Now, I want to reference an experience from the 60s that sounds like it had exactly the right balance. So there we were, exam week, it was all about testing. The week into exam week, 10 minutes on each course at the end of the hour, the last 10 minutes, was dedicated to prep for the upcoming exam, and that was it for the semester. Intense testing during test week, noticeable prep, but not all-encompassing prep, and we were rigidly held to the numerical scores. The scores meant everything. The difference between a 95 and a 91 had meaning. The certainly, when you got down to the 70s, you're in trouble. 70 was no good when I was a kid. A C was no good. It was frowned on. Now, this balance of allegiance to the test in a concentrated way gave us the time for what you mentioned before. We had debates. We had real in-depth learning. Now, we had 56 kids in a class, yet everybody got called on. If you were trying to hide from getting called on, that was mentioned. I didn't see a hand go up all day, Mr. Till, so you will speak now. And you had to stand up and read out loud. Two paragraphs for you, and they went around the classroom. So when did we lose this perspective where we were able to walk and chew gum? Teach, debate, go in depth, and test urgently because the score was all important. Seems like we had that. What did we do? How did we get diverted from that? What took us off that path?
Well, I think what took us off that path was what you had mentioned earlier was an involvement in politics and in big business. Back when No Child Left Behind was passed, there also was a movement to, you know, to create those state tests where the students and teachers would be held accountable to those tests. But you know, teachers and students don't mind, and communities and parents being accountable for their learning. And what you mentioned that happened in the 60s, you know, I agree with you, was a good model. It worked. Being accountable for your learning, you mentioned that, you know, that you had the testing week and the emphasis for a period of time, and that meant everything. And everyone, I believe, in education agrees with that. What they don't agree with is being accountable to politicians, accountable to big businesses that are creating those tests and are making billions of dollars in those test creations and administrations, creating teachers' evaluations that, again, businesses, big businesses, are making billions of dollars.
Right.
And so if we would go back to a way where we had more state and local control, and I really believe as close as we can get to the local control is important, and I believe that we could do it. You know, one of the things that I noticed this past week that's been you know, all over the viral on the news is the teacher in Louisiana that stood up and spoke up at a school board meeting. you know, against the superintendent's raise of $38,000 when the teachers hadn't received a raise in a decade. Well, we all know the results of that. The teacher was asked to leave, and she complied, but she was handcuffed and taken to jail. And, you know, on one hand, we don't, you know, people are in fear for speaking up and those things happening. However, on the other hand, with social media and that going viral, you know, people are mad. They're upset. They say, now, wait a minute, you know, our democracy is all about free speech. We should be able to, especially during a board meeting, where you have the opportunity to, and you sign up ahead of time to speak with your concern to the board, you know, that people are saying, wait a minute, you know, I have a voice too. And it's going on, you know, in every aspect of our lives. And I think that that this is an opportune time in 2018 for communities and schools and local businesses to work together and say, you know, we're going to go to a board meeting and speak out. We're going to invite our legislators to our school. You know, we're going to get our parents involved. In fact, we're going to teach them how to become more involved.
Mm.
So I really think that you know, I have hope.
I love this. I love what you're saying here. I just want to jump in and say, I remember when teacher evaluation was a new thing. And I also remember the change in including parental input in what's happening in the classroom. I think those were two bad ideas. I don't know why we have teacher evaluation. I understand where you could file a complaint from a teacher who does something untoward, you know, smacks a kid, throws somebody out of the room. That I get. That shouldn't require an evaluation form. You should be able to act on that right away. But is it good to have all these cooks in the kitchen? Don't we really need qualified professionals to have the autonomy to educate them? And only the anomalies ought to be, you know, looked into. But for most of the time, you got to let teachers teach, let Trump be Trump, you know, let people be what they are, and then fix the dangerous anomalies, but not institutionalize all of this feedback, all of this discussion, because there's only so many hours in a day. And my experience has been with the ones that go down to the school to, I'm going to take care of that teacher after what they did to my kid that day, I've never seen that have much merit. There's always complainers. There's always ornery types who are happy to come in and go on a tirade on something they weren't even there to witness. They got their kids' rendition of it, and now they're, you know, hot to go after the principal, and I'm going to let this go. And I don't know that that's ever done education any good. What's your thought about this? Is everybody qualified to evaluate? Is everybody qualified to input on testing and curriculum? This seems like a professional endeavor. Would they go to lawyers and tell the lawyer how to act? Would they go to the doctor and tell them where to use the scalpel? You hear my sentiment on this?
Oh, yes, and it's so refreshing to hear you say that, because teaching and education is a profession, and the people involved are very professional and very qualified. And before, we had these contrived teacher evaluations that were, you know, made up by companies. You were absolutely right. You know, the teachers were, the evaluation was, you know, a conversation with the principal or other teachers on to how to make their teaching or their lessons better. You know, asking questions about how they can improve their teaching or their students' learning, or getting together and working together on you know, students that are having difficulty with a concept. So all of those things, you know, are the professional way to do things. You know, I don't believe we need an evaluation that costs billions of dollars and takes up so much time of trying to evaluate and find, you know, 62 different concepts within a 30-minute period that an administrator is in a classroom observing a teacher. You know, it's just, it's a total waste of time and money. So I agree with you. And as far as parents are concerned and, you know, and coming in, of course we want to listen to parents' concerns and we want to address those. But, you know, administrators and teachers are professionals there as well. And we have no problem sitting down with a parent with a concern or an issue and talking about, you know, where they're coming from with that issue or what happened and how we can resolve that. And I think one of the things that's really lacking, and I think it's lacking in all of our society, is we don't listen to each other.
Right.
You know, we don't take the time to really listen to each other. We're in a hurry to come to an answer and you know, get our point across, and we're not hearing the person sitting across the table from us saying, you know, what their issues are and, you know, what their feelings are. And listening is not just about words. You know, it's about interpreting, you know, body language and a person's feeling and looking into their eyes and seeing where they're coming from. And, you know, we just don't listen well.
So when would you like to start as Secretary of Education?
No.
When can you start? Because I think we'll be ready for you Monday. If you can get in Monday at 8.
Monday, I am available. And, you know, Monday is a federal holiday, but that doesn't matter to me. I'll be at work on Monday.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, that harkens to the old days. When we had days off, it was not unusual during the Christmas holiday or during a legal holiday to see a light on in the school. And who was it? Some dutiful teacher, some admin person saying, you know something, I really want this to be right when they come back tomorrow morning, so I'm going to burn some midnight oil and not ask for triple time to do it, but do it out of dedication. All right, so I'm going to give you one that reminds me of the good old days, and maybe we could use this technique. Do you remember the television show Room 222?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I seem to remember a great principal with great faculty, but there were always pop-ins. And we had the pop-in. In the middle of geography class, our principal would come in, and our teacher would stop for a moment, greet them, say, oh, no, I'm just going to sit in the back for a while. And 10, 15 minutes of sitting there. And, of course, the kids, you know, for a moment or two, we had the mandate to look forward, and the chalk continued to write. So there we were doing our thing. There was the teacher being evaluated in real time. And after 10 or so minutes, because it was unannounced and the teacher had no idea, the principal had a very good sample of what goes on in that room. I loved that kind of collegial, we're all on the same team.
Exactly.
Could we get that back? Is there any way to reconfigure us now to recapture some of this? It sounds like it would be impossible, but that's why I ask it of you.
I don't think anything is impossible. I think you know, we're at a critical point where, you know, we need to make a decision. You know, are we going to educate all of our children? Are we going to provide a public education for every child, children with special needs, children that speak many different languages, immigrant children? You know, are we going to be the nation that we aspired to be? Or, you know, are we going to go to a elitist system?
Right.
That, you know, from long, long ago, where, you know, only the rich or those who could afford to send their students to private schools where those things did happen,
right,
are able to participate. So, yes, I believe that the professionals are ready. I mean, they do it anyway. They are collaborative and collegial, and they work together as much as they can. But what's happening is because of the demand with the state testing, and not like you said, where, you know, you deal with it within a certain period of time, but it's day after day. And I just had a teacher tell me last week where, you know, someone beyond the school came in also to observe. And so, you know, the teacher and the principal and the school was being evaluated by someone at, you know, the district level or the state level, you know, to see if all of these 62 things were happening within this 30-minute period.
Right.
And, you know, it cannot continue that way. And I think that we need to speak up, and we need to teach our communities what we can do. We need to show them how to contact our legislators. We need to invite our legislators to our schools. There are so many wonderful, innovative things going on in schools, you know, but you know, the debates, the technology, the robotics, the coding, you know, the students in elementary schools that are now being taught to code,
right,
in technology and all of those things that are going on, but, you know, they are not having the opportunity and the time that they need to really, as you said, go, you know, into deeper, more profound learning.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. I love having you on. I mean, it's no secret to people who listen to me all the time. I love education. I've always loved the classroom. I've actually taught years ago ethics and journalism. That was a joy. Just the other day, I bumped into all my grading cards. I found a big stack of all the I used to grade them every class on class participation, alongside with their written grades from their exams, their midterms. I love this. It was such a personal joy. But I will say also, I still love being in a classroom. I love taking notes. I love listening and kind of immersing for the 40, 45 minutes. So we need you, and we're so grateful for your visit today. I cannot wait for your book to come out, Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. I have a publishing date here of March 15th. Is that still correct?
That is still correct.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to watch for it on Amazon. We're going to send people.
Okay.
I want to send people to your website, which is www.susanacolton.com. And, of course, you're on Facebook like the whole world is. You know what? I'm going to hit you with a quick question about Facebook. It's in the news the past couple of days. I really admire Zuckerberg's reaction to the negative news he got last year about how the kids feel bad and people feel bad sometimes after too much Facebook time. And he said yesterday he's going to diminish the sensational news coverage and accentuate the close friends barbecue news feed to kind of, you know, address this. We need more of that. Facebook can go too far, right?
I agree. I say bravo.
Me too. Oh, I say bravo to you. That's what I say. I say Susan Colton is one of our education heroes. I'm going to keep you on the short list for Betsy DeVos's replacement, okay?
Okay.
May I have your permission to do that?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Susan Colton, thank you again. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to the next time you join us. A really important topic. You're an awesome guest on it.
Thanks so much, Ed.
You bet. Have a nice weekend. The Ed Till Show, Starcom, Radio Network, AM/FM stations all across America, news, weather, traffic, sports, and the close on Wall Street today, another spectacular Dow Jones Industrial Average.